A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Oh, the shape up or care. You let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything about religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33 and a call here with you for the next hour or so. Coming up on tonight's show, we are launching the Team 33 Football Hall of Fame. What does that mean? It doesn't mean that we're going to be adding the best footballers of all time into the Hall of Fame. It doesn't mean that we're going to be choosing a Hall of Fame candidate. It just means that we're going to be talking about our favorite players from our favorite decades for the next couple of weeks. Kieran Bradley and Colin Buig are on the line to discuss the very first week of the Team 33 Hall of Fame. Lads, how are you getting on?
All good.
Good, man. How are you?
So, as much information as I've given our listeners, I've given to you about this Team 33 Hall of Fame. So, essentially, it's a loose structure. There's not really that many categories so far. There might be over the next couple of weeks. But who are your candidates, or who do you think should be part of the Football Hall of Fame? Colin, I'll start with you.
Lee Sharp, the Sharpie Shuffle. Lee Sharp was ahead of his time in a pop culture sense. He paved the way for David Beckham to end up doing what he did. Also, a lot of people be like, oh, Lee Sharp, whatever, waster. But he really wasn't. He actually did a lot of great things just before the Premier League started. And also, Lee Sharp is the proprietor of one of the greatest football biographies I've read, in that he was seriously ill for about a year and a half, and he lived with Fergie. And Fergie just never trusted him, but always rated him as a footballer. And Fergie loved him at the start of his time at United, and then ended up despising him because he thought he was a bad influence on the likes of Ryan Giggs and the class of 92. So he was just like, he was in the right place for his popularity outside of the game. But he was probably just came around too early to really make it as big as he should have made it. But he was a brilliant player, and I just loved him. He was a fundamental part of my childhood.
I'll be honest. When I started this, I out of all the names in the world, and Graham Souness actually had a funny sort of foible on Sky Sports. He said that if you asked 100,000 footballers what their opinion was on the handball rule, then they would all come back and say no. If you had given me a list of 100,000 footballers to enter into the Football Hall of Fame, Lee Sharp would not have made the top 50,000, I don't
Listen,
think.
Listen, if you don't give Kieran Bradley and myself specific instructions, we could do anything. We could do absolutely anything. That's why Lee Sharp is in here, the maverick that he is.
You know what? That's fair enough, Kieran. Football Hall of Fame. One name, two names. How many names do you think that you would like to add in here?
It's not like you to throw a curveball in early doors, Anders. So thanks, Mo. I would, now that you mentioned Sharpie, and I'm a massive Sharpie fan. Like Sharpie was such a little cult hero for United fans in general, and I'm loath to keep this all United given the subject matter of today. But Andrei Kanchelskis for me,
oh, yeah.
was just he was so beautifully foreign, like, as in, you know, he was so exotic to me at like 7-8 years old, and the way he used to run and the way he used to attack defenses, and was just such a key part of that early to mid Ferguson era. I absolutely loved him, and the fact that he was Russian, and for it, seemingly for a bit a man without a country, I'm not quite sure how it worked with his national status, he was fantastic. But to move away slightly from United as well, and probably a slightly later period as well, Dennis Bergkamp, I think, is someone that I would absolutely have in there. Just, I mean, it's well on record as how much he revolutionised Arsenal and what he brought to that side, and really was the kind of catalyst, as Ian Wright was saying last week, for the kind of Arsenal revolution pre-Wenger. He would do things. Actually, I was thinking this earlier when I was thinking about the Cantona stuff. They're very, very similar. Like, their pathways are very similar. Like, they kind of weren't necessarily valued in other places, then they found their home. Bergkamp was just an absolute game changer, and yeah, huge fan of him as well.
Because I'm slightly younger than most people, I've only really stumbled upon I didn't get to watch Bergkamp really at his peak for Arsenal. I didn't get to watch Eric Cantona at all for United, because I don't really remember it. But Bergkamp is someone that I've definitely, over the last couple of years, grown an enormous, enormous crush on, in terms of the way that he plays football, the way that he was able to control it, and just his imagination. And it's something that we've spoken about on the show a couple of times. It's just the mavericks of the game and the creativity that was part of the game in the late 90s, early 2000s, is something that we don't really see anymore, and it's something that we're starting to loathe in the current game, that the players are almost too robotic and too much part of a system, and if that system fails, then the players don't really have the imagination themselves. And I suppose a modern player which springs to mind is probably Bruno Fernandes, who seems to be just that kind of player who will go for the dangerous pass every single time, and we don't really have too many of them in the modern game. In terms of this Hall of Fame, I feel bad now because I'm not going as hipster as used to, and really,
I could guess it. I bet you I could guess it.
Go for it, guess.
Yeah, and I'm younger than most people, Carl. I would say I'm going to go most with right. What a statement.
Most I'm people that say... take part in this show, you know.
Most people in the world. Didier Gat for Celtic.
Wow. You know what? Like, it's not a bad shout. I'm not going for him. I would like to add in later on in the show as someone that was on Off the Ball a couple of weeks ago on a roadshow, Stylian Petrov.
Oh, yeah. What a phenomenal player.
Really underappreciated at the time. The strength he had in midfield, carrying the ball forward, but also he was so silky the way that he passed the ball and went around defenders. He was unbelievable. I also do want to add in a more modern player, Andrea Pirlo, now Juventus manager, because, my God, he's everything about him is beautiful, from his hair to the way that he controls the ball.
No, I just put up my hand there for listeners. Andrea Pirlo gets so much love because of what he looks like. Discuss.
Well, yeah, it's a fair point. But, I mean, you have to look good while also doing really good things on the pitch.
He ruined Joe Hart's career.
He did. One of the best. Kieran Bradley also has his hands up. It's almost like a parent-teacher meeting or a class. We're back. This is what maybe school looks like, secondary school. So Kieran Bradley, down at the back, what would you like to say about Andrea Pirlo?
Well, you're just out of secondary school, apparently. So. we're like Pirlo, we kind of come full circle with, because he was an amazing player, but you got this backlash over the last couple of years of like, well, was he good? Was he as good as people say? He absolutely was. Like, he was phenomenal. That Milan team, that diamond of him, Gattuso, Seedorf, and Kaká, absolutely ripped apart teams and put that Ancelotti side to the top of Europe, obviously, in 2007. He's fantastic. I'm surprised, Andy, you didn't go for Lubo Moravcik. Maybe that was a little touch before your time as well.
Tiny little bit. I have seen a fair bit of him in highlights and stuff, but yeah, a little bit too early. But also, yeah, he was really underappreciated as well.
And actually, to link the two together for today, this is your link, Anna, so feel free. Eric Cantona rates Lubo Moravcik as one of the best players he ever played with. So there you are.
Did he tell you that when you met him?
Ah, listen, mate, we covered a lot of ground. I don't want to go into it. I don't want to break confidences.
So as we actually get into the Hall of Fame chat, and Eric Cantona is the first player up. I posted a photo on the Team 33 Twitter account, at Team 33, if you're interested, all spelled out in words. Kieran Bradley and Eric Cantona. A young Kieran Bradley with a lot more hair, I would like to say. A bigger lock and more curls. How was that meeting? How was meeting the king?
It was so basically a bit of background. Like, a mate of mine and I went to the Looking for Eric premiere, just because that's the kind of metropolitan elite that we are. And so this was, we had a little Q&A afterwards, and I absolutely embarrassed myself once I say, "Hi Eric, first of all, you're my hero, and secondly," I can't even remember the question. Anyway, so met him afterwards, very briefly, just for a photo. And he is, this is one of the things with Cantona, you don't appreciate how big a presence he is, not just the kind of like the aura, but physically. He's 6'2", he's broad shoulders, he's a big old boy. But yeah, anyway, he asked me for a photo and I obliged.
Fair enough. Was it, did you have any conversation with him or?
No, but briefly, in fairness, the Q&A was really interesting because it was with him and Ken Loach. By the way, like, side point, if you haven't seen Looking for Eric, anyone listening, it's absolutely brilliant. It's genuinely brilliant film, regardless of who you support. I recommend it to a good few Liverpool mates, actually, and they were very happy. But yeah, he was just really, as Eric, as you could imagine. You know, I didn't really speak to him much kind of when I got the photos, you can see from my big moon face smile. But it was, yeah, it was fantastic. And that, like, he really is a genuinely good actor, because he's kind of like, he's self-aware. Like, so he plays up to these little bits, and he kind of, you know, I think Keane and Neville sort of alluded to it when they were on with us last year, that, you know, he's self-aware, he knows what he's doing, and he knows how to kind of cultivate that kind of aura around him. But it was fantastic, and a real real experience that I'll never forget.
You're ahead of your time with that haircut, Kieran. I'm just looking at the photo here.
I hadn't even seen the photo. Yeah, do you know what the thing is? I've got a massive head as it is, and the fact that I'm well in the foreground makes it look like I've got a head about the size of Eric Cantona's chest, which is in reality it's only about 3/4.
Some might say that he was younger than most people when that photo was taken.
That was about 23, mate. It was good skincare regime. That's what we need.
You were actually younger than me at that point. Colm, I know you're a massive fan of Eric Cantona, because we have spoken about him before on the show about his kung fu kick, and it was more of a love-in than a discussion about his kung fu kick. You've also written about him, and the opening paragraph is, "The master of his domain, the director of our nostalgic imagination, Eric Cantona stars in his own life as the king." That's why you're the digital editor of Out the Ball.
For that one paragraph, straight up on the LinkedIn. He was otherworldly. Like, you know, Kieran's point there about him being a good actor is really true. I mean, he's so good at, you know, he's not a brilliant actor, but he's a good actor that if he was just an actor and that's what you knew him of, and if you Googled Eric Cantona and he was Eric Cantona, the French actor, you would say, yeah, that checks out. And yet he was this amazing footballer. Like, I remember when, I actually say it in that article, that when we were all knocking about in the park and playing football, and so many of us were Man United fans, that, you know, you'd pretend to be Peter Schmeichel in goal. You know, you'd dive about the place and you'd pretend to have the ceaseless energy of Roy Keane. And, you know, slightly later, you'd imitate Beckham's free kicks. But the only thing you could do with Cantona was put the collar up. And nobody had the maturity or the wherewithal to play like Cantona, because he was so strange as a footballer. He was an anomaly. Like, he looked very much of his era, and that he was quite broad and stocky, but he played like nobody else, that he had this sleight of touch and couldn't really encapsulate his position, and kind of just played in a general free role that I suppose is quite ubiquitous now, but was hard to place then. But I think what fascinates me so much about Cantona is that statistically, he's a very good Premier League player, but he's not a great Premier League player. If you just look at his statistics, like, he played 156 Premier League games. He scored 70 goals and contributed 56 assists. I mean, the likes of Theo Walcott, Gabby Agbonlahor, Christian Benteke, Brian Deane have all scored more Premier League goals than Cantona. But you can't just judge him on that, and you never could. It's what he contributed. And when he came back after the 9 months suspension after the Kung Fu kick in the 1995-96 season, of course, he started with the Liverpool penalty and the 2-2 draw. But he scored five 1-0 wins for United in the second half of that season. And I can't think of a Premier League player who's contributed that much to a title win in the history of the competition.
Well, one of the reasons that I actually haven't defined the categories or the reasons that you're adding these players into the Hall of Fame is because when you get to these kind of situations, these conversations where you're trying to rank the best players or talk about the best players, it inevitably comes down to stats, and people refer to stats. And Eric Cantona and many of the best players that we're going to talk about over the next couple of weeks are not defined by stats. And if you look at their stats, you would think they're a bad player. Likewise with the likes of, say, Xavi, who is also probably going to be on this list. If you look at his stats in terms of assists and goals, you'd think that Xavi was a run-in-the-middle centre midfielder. Same with Eric Cantona. You would not put Eric Cantona in the top 10 strikers if you just look at his goal stats or his scoring stats or his goals per game ratio.
Never. Never. And he was never prolific. Yeah. And I mean, even if you look at the history of his career, I mean, the only other club that he came close to making 100 appearances with was Auxerre in the mid-1980s. So he was nomadic throughout his whole career. And then he finally found his home right at the end. And he found a kindred spirit in Alex Ferguson, who, you know, as much of an authoritarian that Ferguson was, he liked a maverick. And he liked an individualist. And Cantona was able to conform within a group because he was allowed to be free. And you often talk about players that played with him at Manchester United talk now. Roy Keane did it at our roadshow last year, saying Eric was a bit different. We kind of let him off. He was the only player who didn't dress in official club attire, and Ferguson would let him off. And players would complain about it, and Ferguson say, if you can all play like him, you can wear what you want. So, you know, it was going back to Ferguson's expertise in man management. But it's amazing to me that, you know, Cantona left Leeds United quite happily, according to the club, like, and Howard Wilkinson, the manager, because he was in and out of the side. And Fergie found a gem almost accidentally, famously, when Wilkinson asked about the availability of Dennis Irwin. And then within 24 hours, Cantona had signed for $1.2 million.
Listen, has there been a worse phone call from a Leeds perspective? When you ring up to sign one of the best fullbacks in the country at that point, and you end up selling your best player.
Oh my God, I sold to my wife. Yeah, it's mental. It's all wise after the fact. Like, and we've all call it a number of players that have succeeded at one place, haven't succeeded at another. But like, he had absolute magnetism. Like, I was trying to think of this because when you're 7 or 8 years old or whatever, and you see a player like that, and you're kind of used to, the, you know, as much as you can be at 7 or 8, the way English football goes, it's kind of a lot of 4-4-2, it's a lot of muck and bullets. And this guy, like, honestly, if you go back, as I did this morning, as a little treat, but also preparing for this, and watch all of his goals, like, my girlfriend was with me, and she was like, this is insane. Because you not only do you have someone who's able to gallop, like, from the halfway line with the ball and place it in the far corner, he was able to hammer in these headers at the back post. The one against Blackburn, by the way, like, when Giggsy gets off the ball balance. And left, crosses it, he's off balance and he's right by the back post and shoots in the top corner. I mean, this stuff is unbelievable. And then, like, this is leaving aside all the ones that we know, the Sunderland goals, the free kicks. By the way, he scored against Man City more than anyone I've ever seen before. Like, probably of those 72, 70 of them were against City. So it's like, it's really incredible. And it's the fact that he was breaking these lines. Like, he wasn't playing with a traditional 4-4-2. He dropped deep. He would be drifting from left to right. He'd be playing, as we've seen, obviously, in the film and any other, the little balls into Dennis Irwin. It was magic. Like, and there was enough there without Cantona, I'm sure, to have got over the line had they gone with bloody David Hurst or whoever it was they were looking at as well. But like, he was a talisman, and like, he was a hero in that city and to that fan base. And I've never He was my favourite player by a country mile. Like, no one has ever had, you know, even people talk about like Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo in terms of United or you know, Scholes, or, and I love Scholes too, but like, they're not on a par. He had something else. He was above football in a way. He was this, you know, I know we play up to this kind of philosopher as well. He had a real depth, and it was just like, this is the thing, because I mean, Ender spoken, you've obviously mentioned it there, and Arthur in our office as well. There's United fans, but kind of touch too young to really remember it. Like, I'm sure Colin feels the same way, but like, I've never known a player to have certainly an impact on my life like Cantona did. He was incredible.
And then, like, if you talk to like people with a certain vintage of United fans, like Kieran and myself, and you ask him, describe Eric Cantona and what he means to you, it always gets slightly emotional. Like, it's, you kind of end up, you're thinking of adjectives to really encapsulate how he made you feel as a United fan, and even and equally so in hindsight, as well as the time. Because there's been nobody like him. There have been better players who played for United since then, but nobody who captured the spirit of what it means to be a hero to fans. And also, the timing was perfect for him, because I think he was made for that era.
All right, before anyone bursts into tears about Eric Cantona, I do think we should calm things down a little bit. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with a lot more chat about this man, because we haven't even spoken about a major, major point in his career. I'm not talking about the Kung Fu kick. I'm talking about something else. Stay tuned for what that is. Team 33, we'll take a quick break.
Team 33, this is OTB Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back to Team 33, and a call here with you. We are chatting about Eric Cantona tonight as we start our OTB Team 33 Football Hall of Fame, with no real categories, no real judgments, and no real point system. So we're just going to make it up on the spot. Nothing changes there. Colin Buig and Kieran Bradley are on the line with me. If you want to get in touch with the show tonight, text us on 53106 or tweet us at Team 33. Let us know who you think should be in the Team 33 Football Hall of Fame. We are, as I said, talking about Eric Cantona. And before the break, Colin and Kieran were actually getting a little bit emotional, because they were just so emotional about how great this guy was. But he wasn't all great, lads. Because he did have one fatal mistake. The Kung Fu kick, it's something you can't really ignore when you're talking about the story of Eric Cantona. I said that I had a surprise. That's coming later on in the show. The Kung Fu kick, which happens, and he gets a year ban or half a year ban for the rest of the season anyway, and United season kind of falls apart. So, Colm, was he really that great?
Yeah, that has nothing to do with his greatness. What are you talking about?
It does. It does.
No, I mean, he's eulogized for that in many quarters, and obviously pilloried in others. And it just adds to the legend. I mean, you know, you wouldn't be going around encouraging people to go at it again, like, but it's what to be celebrated 25th year anniversary in January. Or we just marked it. But
I think we just marked it. No, I'm not sure if we were celebrating.
And, you know, I can't remember anything that kind of equates to it since then. So it's just a mad moment. And it kind of adds to certainly to his legacy about how successful he was at United, because it was the only season when he was at the club that United didn't win the league. And, you know, lost to an unfancied Blackburn Rovers in terms of winning the league. I know Blackburn were thereabouts, but they actually got over the line in Cantona's absence. And then, of course, Everton beat United in the FA Cup final, which was 100% a surprise. Then you have, you know, Cantona out of the game for 9 months, comes back and did what we touched upon in the earlier part of the show in 1995-96, which for me was the greatest individual season in Premier League history in terms of the impact he made. But with the Matthew Simmons incident in January 95 at Selhurst Park, it was a low point. In his time in England with Cantona, it was what they all worried about that he would be, that this incredibly temperamental and combustible character, and it showed that night. But at the same time, it's very much part of his legacy.
You mentioned a documentary to me last night, and I watched it this morning. If anybody wants to check it out, you can find it on YouTube. It's The Return of the King, it's called. It was a short Sky Sports documentary that sort of talks about his return after that Kung Fu kick, and even just it briefly gives you the background of what went on there. And that season he had afterwards when he returned was incredible, considering he was ready to walk away from the game.
It was unbelievable. And to like directly contribute in such a fashion that he did, because he was so long out of the game. As you say, Andy, he was going to walk away. He was going to retire in the summer of 95, only for Alex Ferguson to intervene and go to Paris. And they had a clandestine meeting in a restaurant, and Ferguson convinced Cantona, look, you have unfinished business here. You need to come back and show them what they would be missing. Because while he did consider retirement, Cantona, he was also seriously considering, on the other side, a move to Inter Milan in Serie A, which would have been a great move for him as well. But Ferguson's iconic man management skills again convinced Cantona to stay put. And then, you know, he had the amazing Liverpool comeback where he set up the first goal for Nicky Butt in the 1st of October 95, and then scores the penalty late on to come away with a 2-2 draw. And he scored important goals again at the back end of 95, but it was into 96, it was the second half of that season. And everybody remember thinks of the Newcastle goal at St James's Park, where Peter Schmeichel kept United in the game in the first half. Cantona volleyed in the bottom corner second half. But it wasn't just that, it was the 1-0 against West Ham where he scored from an incredibly tight angle in January. He scored the only goal against Arsenal at home, which was the dipping volley. He scored against Spurs in the next game, where he ran half the pitch. Then he scores the decisive goal in the 3-2 victory in the Manchester Derby, where Kieran already talked about he scored against Man City all the time. And he scored in another 1-0 win against Coventry towards the end of the season, not to mention his winner in the FA Cup final against Liverpool. It is an unbelievable CV to have. Like, I would encourage anyone, just Wikipedia Man United 95-96 season, and then look, scroll down for the results, and it's just Cantona, 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 decisively, second half of the season. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and for anybody who didn't catch that documentary, it's The Return of the King. You can find it on YouTube. If you're a fan of Stone Roses, it essentially has all of the Stone Roses and all of Second Coming all crammed into this 24-minute documentary. Whatever about what Ian Brown is doing right now, what he was doing back in the 90s was incredible. Kieran, your thoughts on the Kung Fu Kick. One thing I actually noticed about this is that the picture makes it look far more dramatic than it actually is. If you look at it, it looks like he's about 10 foot off the ground in the picture, when in reality he's kind of just jumping over the railings a little bit.
Yeah, well, it makes it look far more technically proficient than it actually was. Like, it was a bit of a stramash, as our Scottish cousins would call it. But in terms of the kick itself, like I was thinking about this earlier, we continue to underestimate how dirty, in inverted commas, Cantona was considered in the English game. Like, he was reasonably consistently getting red cards, and for stuff like the stamp on John Moncur and any others. Just on the Kung Fu Kick, I had a great story about that. When they were going back in, either half-time or full-time, they were kind of anticipating what Ferguson would say. So I think it was Bruce and Sharp. Bruce kind of nudges Sharp and goes, Jesus, what's this going to be about? Anyway, so Ferguson gets into the dressing room and berates a number of different players, you know, and then comes to Eric and he just goes, you can't do that. So, you know what, like, I think it adds to the mystique, obviously. Look, to be honest, he is obviously, I, the fan, Matthew Simmons was mouthing off against him, although I believe in court he said that his defence was, I was saying, au revoir, Mr. Cantona.
It's an early bath for you,
yeah. So if you believe that, I believe anything. But yeah, he came precariously close, obviously, to ending his United career. But as we've seen in several occasions, obviously with Beckham as well, Ferguson rallies around players in times of difficulty. He gets the club to envelop them. That's exactly what they did with Eric Cantona. It's interesting that you mentioned Inter Milan, because that time, well, around 1995, that would have been when Dennis Bergkamp was leaving Inter Milan to go to Arsenal. So we've talked about that kind of maverick link. Then it might have been the case that Eric was going to replace Dennis, but it wasn't. It was something that really stood out at the time, because obviously you don't see that at all. And as a kid, you're just like, oh my God, he's out. And then obviously for the rest of the season, so I went up to Old Trafford and watched United beat Ipswich 9-0, and he wasn't around. So, like, you know, it made a big difference. And then, but he came back like a man possessed. And as Colin's mentioned there, by the way, that West Ham goal, I don't think gets the credit it deserves.
No, like,
ridiculously tight angle, and it's not meant for him at all. It's on his left foot. But see, this is the thing with Cantona. Like, he had everything. Like, he was bow footed. He had the strength, he had the pace, he had the technical ability. Like, he had the mannerisms for success. So it was a wonderful performance and one of many.
Yeah, it was actually 9 months that he got in total, because it was the remainder of the season plus the summer. So he was out until essentially the next season, when he returned against Liverpool in a game that he actually starred in. He was one of the most famous photos of Cantona climbing the post at the back of the goalpost, which is, again, an exceptional photograph and something that somebody who hasn't heard of it should go back and look at. Comparable with what modern player would you say, Kieran? Because, like you said, he had everything. He had he was built like an ox, plus he was incredibly skillful with the ball. Is there anybody in the modern game that does anything like him?
Yeah, I was thinking this. Zlatan's as close as you probably come. Like there aren't many players like Cantona now. Like they've kind of been moved out of the top levels of the game as the game's kind of moved on. Obviously, we saw with the Barcelona team, it was a lot of small technical players, and you see the antithesis to that with Mourinho's kind of big monsters and stuff like that. But Zlatan would be as close as you come. I'm not really a fan of the whole I am Zlatan kind of, you know, BTEC Cantona thing, but he has the technical ability, he has that kind of aura, and he's also in phenomenal shape. So I suppose that would be the closest you'll come, at least to my mind.
Yeah, Zlatan tested positive for COVID this week on Thursday, or as they like to say, the COVID caught Zlatan, as Twitter is framing it in their hilarity that is the 15, 20 people who magically come up with the same joke on Twitter. But we're talking about Eric Cantona, we're not talking about Zlatan today. It's a fair enough point, though. Like, I do think, probably Zlatan is the closest person you can think of, maybe not to the same level. A lot of the players that we think of that do have these careers in the Premier League actually move on from the Premier League and go on to, I don't want to say bigger things, but a lot of the players that do well in the Premier League end up going back to mainland Europe and playing for Barcelona, Real Madrid, AC Milan when they were big, or Bayern Munich, and just going to another super club. Eric Cantona didn't, which is quite interesting. He moved to United when he was 26, and he finished his career there. So that has to be one of the most, delayed Mount Rushmores of your career, Colin. What do you think?
Yeah, we were discussing it earlier before we started recording. The only thing I can equate to it at the elite level of the game was Ian Wright moving to Arsenal when he was 28, and then I think he's the second top scorer in Arsenal's history currently. But he did have spells after Arsenal, so I can't think of anyone who so abruptly retired like that. I mean, Zinedine Zidane left at Real Madrid, retired after 2006 World Cup and the headbutt against Marco Materazzi. But I think while that was, people kind of lamented that decision and said, well, Zidane could have played on for another year or two, it wasn't that surprising. Yeah. Whereas Cantona called it in 6 days before his 31st birthday.
Yeah, I think the main point, though, that I'm trying to make here is that Zidane, for example, was incredibly successful at Juve before moving to Real Madrid, where he had further success. You think of Ronaldo, who was at Inter, really good at Inter, and then moved on to Barcelona, and then moved on to Real Madrid again. Whereas Eric Cantona came from nowhere and then just magically appeared as this world-class player at his final club. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, that's my point. I mean, that's what I'm saying, that Zidane is the only thing equated, but he was already world-class, so I can't think of any others. But that sums up Cantona. He was a mystery. He was an enigma. He didn't tell anybody he was retiring, he just walked out. And in hindsight, there were hints in the 1996-97 season, because he did everything he wanted to do the previous season. Even though he still had great moments in his last season, no more so than the Sunderland chip, but there was a volley against Wimbledon, and there were other moments where there was a goal against Derby County at Old Trafford. Like, he had still great individual moments, but he kind of lost the spark a bit. And that's how good he was when he wasn't giving it his all anymore. He was still excellent. But I think the thing with Cantona was he always had the ability. It wasn't like he became a world-class player. He probably wasn't world-class either, but he was just on the level below. But he was always great, but he never realized his potential, because he either never had a manager who fully understood him, or he never had a club that did, or maybe he was the problem himself, but he calmed down at the end, and then Ferguson got the best out of him.
How big of a thanks, or how big of a moment was it that Alex Ferguson took over this guy's career? Would he have achieved as much had Alex Ferguson not signed him?
No way. No, it was the perfect match. Like, Ferguson was looking for, or maybe not actively looking for, but found the creative catalyst for this side that had a lot of steel, had a lot of, you know, good skill, and obviously had the likes of Ryan Giggs coming through, who was adding a great deal of speed and wizardry down the left and the right, depending on where he's playing. But Cantona, he was doing things that you didn't really see very often in the Premier League. So there was no iteration of Manchester United that wasn't improved by Cantona's presence, either mentally or physically or technically. He really did set, he did get them over the line. And there's a very good argument to say that he is one of the architects of United's recent success in a playing sense. To go to the retirement for a second, like, without wanting to mystify Cantona too much, you know for a fact that it would be in his thought process to go out at the peak of his powers rather than fading away. In fairness, like, you kind of, when you think about it, at United he was there for, you know, 5 or 6 years. Sorry, 4 or 5 years. But he, what he did then was burn brightly, but he didn't want to burn out. So I think as I was watching some of the goals, the fact that the Sunderland goal at home, which is just, is the peak Cantona. Like, it's the arrogance, the technical ability, the drawing in of teammates as well, like playing off Brian McClare and then this beautiful chip and then the celebration. That was one of his final goodbyes to Old Trafford, and I think that's really quite poetic. And I think that's something that genuinely Cantona does consider. Like, he's unusual in that respect, and United fans are all the better off for it.
Colm, I know you're a big fan of Cantona off the pitch as well. He is probably one of the most interesting characters to come out of that generation of footballers. And there are a lot of broadly interesting characters from that generation of footballers comparable with this year's.
Yeah, well, he has a really interesting background himself. His grandfather was Spanish from Barcelona and fled the Spanish Civil War. Fled Franco's nationalists, and I think his father lived in a cave for a time when they were building the family home in Marseille. So I guess his background would suggest that there were more important things to life than football, and that football was never all his life, but it's what he loved most for a period of time. And I guess what made him unusual was that part of the reason that he did retire so abruptly was that he began to become disillusioned with the commercialization of football and how much he felt he was being used by the United marketing team and Nike in general, who he was sponsored by. I mean, I'm loath to think what he would make of modern football if he was playing in this era. That's why I think his time was perfect for him. But when he did call it a day, you know, it's amazing to think that Alex Ferguson, a couple of months after, I think it was in August 97, wrote him a letter, a gushing letter, lamenting Cantona's decision to retire and saying, I agree with your father that I don't think you should have retired that early, but I hope this opens up the opportunity for us to become friends, which is incredible. This is like, I can't believe it. Like, Alex Ferguson has ever spoken to an ex-player like that or about an ex-player like that. And I think Fergie did something with The Guardian about 5 years ago, and he was talking about the fact that he only ever had 4 world-class players that played under him in the 26 and a half years as United manager, and there was Ryan Giggs, Paul Scholes, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Eric Cantona. And what he meant by that was that, maybe he meant that because there were 4 of the players that he didn't fall out with, but all the other star players he did in some way. But with Cantona, it's, I guess it's a case of, like, I would say of the 4 of those players, he's probably the least talented, but he, in terms of clutch moments, there was nobody better. And I guess that's what Fergie was alluding to, that when the club really needed Cantona, he was there. And also, you can't overlook the fact that when Cantona arrived at United, you know, he did decently well at Leeds and they won the last First Division title, but he wasn't the star there. United had gone 26 years without winning the league title, and Cantona comes in and he's not the only reason that they won their first Premier League title or their first league title since 1967, but he was a prominent reason.
He also, I think he really vibed off Manchester at that time. Like, he really seemed to get the people, and the people seemed to get him. There was obviously an absolutely insane music scene at this point, and he was coming in and elevating United, and it must have just been a real catalyst for him personally. I just found that really interesting too. Like, there's obviously a lot of inputs that go into someone really succeeding in their life, whatever it may be. And I just think it was kind of right time, right place for Cantona and Manchester United.
And also, this is how much of an impact he had. And Kieran's right to mention the Manchester music scene, because Where did he rock up last year? Of Liam Gallagher's music videos.
Yeah. Once, that was incredible. You know, that was
staunch Manchester City supporter. Even he admits Anthony is a legend.
Yeah, it's one of those things that sort of separates him from the other footballers from that era. He's just, and it's one thing that I think it's McAllister or McClare that mentions that mentions it in the documentary that when he came in to United, the reason he stood out was not because of his footballing ability, it was because he wasn't really your typical laddish footballer who was into going out and drinking and that sort of culture. He was into poetry, he was into art, he was a bit left field on it. And the moment that I wanted to bring up as one of the biggest moments of his career was actually post Kung Fu Kick, when he was in the press conference and he said, when the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they know that there are going to be fish thrown into the sea. Because that is the precise moment Eric Cantona went from only a footballer for Manchester United to a much more interesting character of all sorts of things in his life. He was now separating his football life from his own brand, his own personality. He completely stood out from everyone else at that point.
So the funny thing is that Keane at least maintains that Cantona was playing with the press and with the public there. Like, he was self-aware, like, he knew that he was seen as this kind of Gallic enigma, and I think he was playing up to it a little bit. But, like, it had some merit as well. Like, it was an absolute media, you know, circus around Cantona's actions at Selhurst Park. I mean, you only have to listen to that Jonathan Pearce commentary on Capital Gold to realise quite how hysterical he managed to make people. And to be honest, like, United love a bit of that. Like, they love a siege mentality. They love the just, you know, battening down the hatches and rallying around a player. Because he has that similar characteristic that you see with some Mavericks, as we talked about with Gascoigne before. Whereas, it might be quite fragility, but there's just a little something different about him there. And you have to kind of nurture it and, protect it a little bit. And, you know, Cantona had been rebuffed and pushed aside, you know, largely in part because of his own actions, but at international level and at several clubs. And Ferguson just read him perfectly. Like, he knew exactly what to do and how to do it. And, like, you know, Keane said it obviously in our show last year, you know, leave off, he's French kind of thing, like a little, it's a throwaway line, but it's true. Like, he just got it. And it was fantastic, really good.
Right, lads. We're getting near the end of this. I know I haven't given you much steer on what I'm looking for here in terms of categories or point systems or anything like that. But Eric Cantona was the first person that sprung to mind when I said that we're going to be doing something like this for both of you. So I'll go to you, Colin, first. Give me one argument why Eric Cantona should be in the Team 33 Football Hall of Fame.
Because he was an absolutely brilliant footballer, and that's not the first thing you think about when you think of Cantona. You think about what he represented and the fact that he transcended the sport and transcended life. And he's the first person that would be inducted into any of these type of categories, because he meant so much more than just being a great footballer. He was a culture himself. He was his own culture. Like, he came third in the Ballon d'Or in 1983, and that doesn't matter to his legacy. You don't even talk about that. The guy was his own planet, and is his own planet.
Kieran, can you better that? Can you best it? Can you add something else to it?
Transcendental was certainly the thing I was thinking of. So cheers, Colin. I think...
All right, that's a show done.
No, look, he plays by his own rules. And I like... I think we all like to see players that kind of play outside the lines a little bit and kind of play with the mechanics of football as we understand it. So he was just magical to watch. He was by far the most interesting and my favourite player, and I came across him at a time where it was perfect for me to really, really fall deep in love with football as a result of Eric Cantona.
Team 33.
This is OTB Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back to Team 33. So that's all we have time for on tonight's show. Thanks to you for listening. Remember, if you want to listen back to any of that, you can get it as part of the OTB Podcast Network, available now on the brand new OTB Sports app, which you can get on the Google Play Store or Apple Store as well. That's where you can find all the Team 33 podcasts. And if you get a chance, subscribe to the podcast, give it 5 stars, and you'll get notified anytime a new show goes up, usually up on Thursday or Friday. We'll be back again with more Team 33 Football Hall of Fame next week. But until then, take away, Johan.
A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com code PROGRAM.